This is And Your Bird Can Sing, which to me offers up an opportunity to track the intersections of the Beatles, Bob Dylan, and the Byrds. Some key moments in their shared histories. When Bob Dylan first hears I Want to Hold Your Hand on the radio in early 1964, he thinks the chorus goes, I get high, instead of I can't hide. So he's kind of surprised when he meets the Beatles in August of that year that they had actually not yet smoked marijuana. Steve Turner, author of The Hard Day's Right book, thinks something from that first meeting of these music giants when Dylan introduced the Beatles to pot appears in the song And Your Bird Can Sing.
The first time they took pot in the company of Bob Dylan in the Delmonico Hotel in New York, Paul suddenly thought he knew all the secrets of the universe, and he asked for a piece of paper, and Mal Evans, their roadie, gave him a piece of paper, and he wrote down the secret of the universe. And then the next morning he asked Mal Evans for the paper, and all that was written on this piece of paper was, there are seven levels. And I wondered whether John was kind of saying, you know, you think you've seen this, but at this time John and George had taken LSD, but Paul hadn't. So maybe John was thinking like, well, I'm one step ahead of you, you know. You say you've seen seven wonders, but I've seen even more than that.
The ringing guitars of And Your Bird Can Sing conjure up the Byrds' guitar sound, which, not surprisingly, had its genesis with the Beatles. In 1964, when the Beatles hit big, Roger McGuinn was a New York folkie who started putting a Beatle beat to traditional folk songs. Then he moved to L.A. in mid-1964 and hooked up with David Crosby. Here's McGuinn's story from a mid-1980s television interview.
I had an acoustic 12, and I put a pickup on it, and it sounded okay, but it wasn't really the sound we were looking for. And we went to see the Beatles in A Hard Day's Night, and I noticed that George Harrison was playing this sneaky 12-string. See, it looks like a 6-string this way, but if you turn it this way, you can see another 6 strings over here. I went, that's really a 12-string. So I went out to the music store and got one.
McGuinn and the Byrds heightened the effect of what Paul McCartney called that jangly thing. And the Beatles crank that jangly thing up a notch in this tune. But they're not using a 12-string guitar like it may sound, as musician John Spurney eventually figured out.
There's this great double lead on And Your Bird Can Sing. I know so many guys, so many guitar players who have you know, sat with the record trying to learn. When I sort of got older and started playing music for a living and working in studios and stuff, it became incredibly obvious to me that it's, you know, it's double tracked. It's like he played one line and then went back and played a harmony line to that first line he had played.
The Dylan connection comes up again in the obscurity of this lyric. Dylan was trending towards surreal writing in 1965 and 1966. John Lennon was showing signs of emulating Dylan on Rubber Soul and certainly on Revolver. Again, Steve Turner.
It's kind of mysterious because you don't know what he's singing about. He's singing about a girl, you know, because an English term for a girl, particularly at that time, was a bird, or is he singing about a real bird? And even if he is singing about a real bird, what on earth is it all about?
This song is also a prime example of a studio invention the Beatles engineering crew came up with. It's especially appreciated if you listen to this album with headphones, something called artificial double tracking. Here's Mark Lewison.
Ever since 1963, they had been keen, in fact, ardent double trackers. They like to thicken their sound. John, in particular, once he discovered double tracking, very rarely issued anything that wasn't double tracked. But double tracking was a chore. It basically entailed manually singing along with your own previously recorded vocal track so that you've got two vocal tracks. You've got to virtually replicate the way you sung it the first time, and John in particular was not very good at replicating anything a second time. It was always going to be different next time he did it. One day at the Revolver sessions, John said, apparently, isn't there any way we could do this automatically? I mean, you know, we've got technology. Can't we just, you know, invent some new way? And there was a guy there called Ken Townsend in his white lab coat, which is what they all wore, who went away and thought about it and wondered whether indeed it could be done automatically or artificially. Hey presto, he came back the next day or soon after with some method of running the same track through over the recording head with a very slight delay. The merest fraction of a delay would just repeat the vocal track, as it were, but just that very slight bit behind.
So with imaginative studio craft, Dylan surrealism, Byrdsian chimey guitars, again Beach Boys-like harmonies, all passing through the Beatles' creative filter, This song that John Lennon called a throwaway actually seems quite deep and wonderful. Musician and radio producer David Gans.
That the Beatles were listening to Brian Wilson, and Brian Wilson was listening to the Beatles, and Roger McGuinn bought a 12-string because he heard the Beatles, and then the Beatles learned from Roger McGuinn. You know, it makes me happy to think that there was that kind of sort of heavenly board meeting on Earth or something, you know.